Good evening and welcome to Outsources, a weekly KGNU program that provides you with content related to the queer community. I'm your host, Sean Kenny, and tonight I'm in the studio with Denver-based artist and designer Kenzie Sitterud. Kenzie is currently an artist in residence at Redline Contemporary Arts Center, a space for artist and community engagement in Denver. As a designer who challenges people to think about identity and inclusion by creating queer installation spaces, Kenzie's work prompts attendees not just to look, but to think critically, to act, and to be in community. Kenzie, thanks so much for joining Outsources tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Before we get into your current work, actually, I was hoping we could kind of pull back a bit and start by talking about community. I think this is sort of a thread that is woven through a lot of your work, and I'm just curious, how did community, belonging figure into your own background and kind of experience growing up?
So I grew up in a small coal mining town in Utah. My father was an evangelical pastor. My community was, you know, church-based. And so I didn't really have community, because a queer community. So, once I left, I felt that it was very important to create community and a family around me, as well as around my work, and create spaces for queer people. One of our goals at being a Redline artist is for community engagement, and that's definitely part of my mission statement as well. So with my background of not having LGBT resources, I felt that it was important for me to create that space for myself as well as my family.
Yeah, and I mean, your work itself, you're creating these interactive installations, which are really experiences that are calling people into an experience and really engaging with it rather than kind of maybe passively observing it from a distance. How did you come to that medium or decide that that was what you were drawn to?
I did my first immersive installation in 2008, and it was an installation called The Bathroom. Why I did that was because I just didn't have the resources to produce artwork, so I was finding objects, and I found a sink, and I took this sink, and I put my self-portrait into this sink, and I was like, huh, that's the perspective of the bathroom. So I started, like, gathering things off of Craigslist, little objects and painting on them, and then creating these fully immersive installation pieces, and created this installation called The Bathroom. It's also a connection point where all humanity has to go to the bathroom. So it's like it was a connector for everyone, really. The tiles, though, if you've seen a certain theme within my work, is the checkerboard. And the tiles were donated to me. And since 2008, I've used tiles in all of my installations. In the more recent years, after I actually went to design school for communication design, we were taught to communicate efficiently our ideas through our visual representation. Well, for my thesis piece, I did the kitchen table. And the kitchen table was definitely more... let me back up. In 2008, I was just coming out of the closet, but very actively coming out of the closet. I had my rainbow face. But by the time, 2016 came around, 30 years old at that point, I came up with my thesis piece, The Kitchen Table, which was fully immersive through the queer lens. So it invited the audience to... go into the space and experience the same dysphoria that queer people experience in a world that is not designed for them. And that was like the main point of that. So throughout that installation, there were little secrets and little riddles, so that it confused people when they walked in, because the kitchen table was literally on a wall with these high contrast pink and orange going. But then there was just like little media here and there that represents queer identity and how the world is not inclusive of our pronouns, of even like our marriage licenses. I had a North Carolina marriage license that I put on there just because those documentations weren't even considered or, even produced at that time, or they were just being, but they just the wording was just like male, female. So there was no spots for non-binary folks. So I redesigned that North Carolina marriage license and put that on the kitchen table. You know, just like little things to like cue people into the work and like draw them in, other than just like looking at the pretty painting and then walking away. I wanted people to really feel a part of it. And then...
So that's where that kind of immersive part of the experience comes in, where people are really being called to kind of enter into the work of art or the painting, so to speak, rather than just watch it from afar.
Yeah. And my most recent piece, The Wardrobe, like literally pulled people inside. So it was a 4x4x10 foot box. It was designed to create anxiety when you look at it, or like kind of awkwardness, because it was just this awkward box in the middle of a gallery with a very small door. So,
all right, almost like a cell from the outside.
Yeah. So made people really hesitant and like have anxiety. Should I go in this? Should I touch the artwork? Is this a sculpture? Really confused everyone. And that was an intentional design. And then when people would walk in, it was designed to have a very calming effect, on almost like a hallucinogenic effect as well, because I also play with mirrors and infinity. So they walk into the space, and then there's typography that with queer vocabulary. There was a little projection onto some eggs that was a 1960s athletic video. And then when we looked up, there was a neon eye, and that was to represent the eye of God looking down on you. But it was also designed in the color pink, because the color pink and neon calms the nervous system. So when the person would go in and activate it by shutting the doors, they would feel calm, which on the outside, they were having anxiety, but in the inside, they were feeling calm. So it was creating that same feeling of being in the closet. Like, it's really nice to be in here. Like, I don't want to come out. I don't want society to judge me. I just don't want this. And then you're kind of forced out, because you can't stay in there forever. Or you can, but I would fully support you coming out. So that was with that that immersive installation. That was really fully immersive.
And sort of seems to maybe even trouble this idea that the closet is a horrible place, or somewhere that, you know, I think there can be a sort of black and white view of like people in the closet, they're, you know, maybe somehow lesser or living this. And I think probably the truth is a little more complex. And it seems like that work is sort of teasing out that, yeah, there's a lot to, you know, these different ways of kind of experiencing the closet or seeing the closet from the outside, those types of perspectives. And you don't really get that until you experience the work itself.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, too, just about these domestic spaces. I mean, you're picking these everyday spaces that we all, like you said, are very commonplace. We all experience them. But I imagine we all have our own kind of history or baggage, so to speak, with these spaces. I mean, are you experiencing that personally as you create each of these new projects of kind of digging further into your own experience with these spaces as you move deeper into kind of building this house or queer rooms in this house that you're creating?
Yeah, well, I would say that my work is getting more and more personal. And like with this last one, with the wardrobe, I had Madonna's Ray of Light playing on an MP3 player. And that was like very... That was very fundamental to my own coming out story, because when I was in fourth or fifth grade, or I don't know, my friend snuck me in a CD of Madonna and the Ray of Lights, that album. And I was listening to that song and I had this epiphany of, oh my God, I'm gay. Like, just like, I'm gay. And like, so that was very personal. But with the wardrobe itself, I had to like really think about my coming out story, and it wasn't a pretty picture, pretty like traumatic actually. So what I'm finding is that I'm digging deeper within my own core to produce works that have that energy, so that it gets out of my body that trauma gets out of my body, but also enlightens other people to like be a little bit more empathetic to queer identities and queer coming out stories, because I think that's really important to really feel supported. And so I want to like create spaces that create support for the queer identity while examining my own identity as well as story.
And you mentioned a bit too that these are queer spaces that you're building that in some way, I think, signify something different if you identify as queer or not. And for those who maybe have sexual or gender identity privilege, they might feel a sense of discomfort or unease in experiencing some of these queer spaces. And that's sort of the point, right? But at the same time, that piece is also sort of creating a connection or helping that person understand maybe the queer perspective. How do you walk that line, or how do you navigate that in thinking about that sort of estrangement, challenging the viewer, but also connecting with the viewer and getting them to better feel connected to that queer perspective?
I encountered several thousand people with the installation of the wardrobe, and there were so many different perspectives and so many different opinions and experiences that were all unique to the person. Some people just didn't get it at all, like just clearly didn't get it. It was like very white privileged people that just didn't understand that it was a queer space and like used the heteronormative lens and interpreted it through that. And there was no even mention of gay. So I did a lot of listening to these people and like what they thought of my artwork. So that was really interesting. But then that gave me that space to be like, actually, this is what it is. And this is, I'm trying to invoke these feelings in you so that it encourages you to see the queer perspective. So I try to, you know, create learning moments for these type of people. And, you know, I just really just want to help people understand. But another perspective of people experiencing that work, I had a younger kid go in there, and during the opening, and they were in there for, I don't know, like 7 minutes, which there was a line, it was a lot. They came out and were crying, and it was just like they came up and said, thank you, I needed this to understand my own identity. So from that perspective, it helped them embrace their queer identity.
If you like the feeling of the heart rain falling, I ever see for I can give you a notion.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Outsources on KGNU. I'm your host, Sean Kenny, and I'm talking with Kenzie Sitterud, a Denver-based artist and designer. Kenzie became an artist in residence at Redline, a contemporary art space in Denver, in September of last year. You also created Gay Church, which is this project of yours that is an event that you hosted in March, and you invited attendees to bring a dish and share their coming out stories. So how did this project come about? And, you know, already I think you can sort of see the tie-ins from how you're talking about your installation pieces and an event like Gay Church.
Yeah. With Gay Church, it was designed to give space to people to acknowledge that they have a coming out story and they're kind of traumatic, or they're amazing and butterflies and I'm so happy for everyone that gets that experience. But my partner and I, we work pretty closely within the queer community and creating queer spaces to help support queer identities, et cetera, et cetera. But at Redline, I have this wonderful opportunity to have space whenever I want it. So I'm like, well, if I have space and I've been given this incredible opportunity, well, I want to share this with my community, because there's not a whole bunch of queer artists out there with that privilege. So with the installation, the wardrobe, I thought it would be a perfect opportunity to launch this idea of Gay Church. So I know that when I'm upset, I want to eat. And And when I'm upset, I want to be distracted. So we had a potluck and a DJ, and we invited people to come up on Will and have a 3-minute coming out story. So they'd tell their whole story in 3 minutes. And then to shake it off, we had the DJ and we'd have like little mini dance parties. It was really fun. But then on that, we're just like making different connections in the community, but also feeding our community and creating safe space for our community. So yeah, so Gay Church was like an incredible event that I'm looking forward to doing again.
Can you talk a little bit about the name? I mean, you mentioned growing up with very religious parents, and now you've created Gay Church, but I get the sense that church means something very different than the context that you mentioned towards the beginning of the interview. So why Gay Church?
Honestly, because when we were looking at the calendar, Sunday was the only day open. So I thought, well, we'll just make a pun out of it. And so I called it Gay Church. And it was funny because people were like, is this religious? And I'm like, no, not at all. So yeah, that's where Gay Church came from.
You were a practicing musician in Seattle.
Yes.
Right before you came back to Denver a few years back. How did you encounter some of these issues of community, audience, when you were making music?
I've always had the desire for the stage. I was making music since I was 13 years old. And in my small town, I didn't really have any opportunities. So I just kept on making music. I moved to Denver, started college, moved up to Seattle, and continued making music and toured and did radio shows. But my community engagement was much different then. It was more, I'm going to say narcissistic. Back then, I was kind of in a drunken coma, I'd call it. So I just like kind of just made this really sad, angsty music and then promoted shows and, you know, had concerts. And that was great. I created community through my shows, but it wasn't for like an agenda to like help better the world. So by 2013, I released my album and decided that was probably going to be, I played a few shows when I returned back to Denver, but I didn't feel like it was fulfilling me the same way that art fulfilled me. So I went back to making art.
Going back to Gay Church and your art installation pieces, you're describing, and we've been using this language of these spaces as queer spaces, but I'm wondering if we can kind of think of queer as verb as well. I mean, this idea of creating, shifting, maybe challenging norms in a given space. You know, how do you queer a space? Because I think you do that. You're building a queer house room by room with these installation pieces. What does that mean to you as you've been kind of doing these pieces and as that work has evolved to queer a space?
Yeah. So I try to put a lot of typography in my work of like queer vocabulary. So there's like the obvious one. But I think like the really contrasty bold color is a sign of, you know, I mean, the sign for LGBTQ is a rainbow. We just love our color. So like I just like try to bring as much color as possible. It kind of has that pop art look, very colorful. When I'm queering a space, though, I try to like put, like I've spoke about this earlier, but put little metaphors throughout the whole thing so that people have to kind of investigate in order to get the whole idea of queering the space. But yeah, I would just say like color and typography really like brings it home on the queerness.
Right. There's something about, you know, that you can't, the suspicion that you can't take this space for granted in a way that you might normally take a bathroom or a closet or, you know, some old room in your house for granted, that there are these clues that speak to something deeper or different or a complexity. But I'm wondered as kind of a related piece to that, as things are kind of shifting and with you and your understanding of and relationship with queer identity, how do you see that impacting your work? I mean, especially looking down the road.
That's a great question. I think that my work is maturing the same way that in the same rate that I'm maturing. So it's like it's fun to see like a progression of different parts of of myself being reflected in the work. But so my current project that I'm starting on is the bedroom. And I generally, like I've told a curator, I want to punch him in the face with color. And I tried to, but with this one, I'm like, well, I'm feeling a little less color. And I want to really think about, now that I'm 31, I'm like, okay, I have to like do the whole grown-up thing of, you know, I'm just trying to like, well, I'm not trying to, but I have to like evolve as a person. So I'm really examining the binary with this work and like gender norms.
So binary in the sense of either or, male, female, good, bad, these kind of categories of two that we tend to organize our world into.
So everything is going to be black and white instead of using color. The binary being male and female at this point, and then these gender norms that are just kind of taught to us from a young age, and then creating more of a almost like a sculptural work than an immersive installation. So that's going to be much different than, you know, sticking a table on a wall that happened a couple years ago. So I think that my work is definitely maturing and also examining like roles that are happening within my own life and like my settling down with my partner. And like, people are like, well, you know, are you going to propose or who's the man? And, you know, who's going to be the breadwinner? Like just asking these general gender norms these values that I don't really commit to, but are being forced to commit to. So that's kind of how it's kind of evolving. I'm actually pretty excited about this work because it's going to be a lot of metaphors and symbolism throughout it.
So you've talked a little bit about further down the road, but maybe in the more immediate term, what can listeners do to see your work, to learn more about, you know, what you're doing?
Well, the best way to get in touch with me is through my website, and it's kenziemckenzie.com. Also, I'm a big fan of Instagram. So if you want to get on your Instagram at Kenzie Sitterud, that's a great way of like examining my work and kind of my random thoughts. Like I'll put just like little illustrations to full like progress photos. So it's kind of a fun feed. But yeah, just go onto my website and look at my Instagram. But also if you want to come and see me in person, I'm at Redline 5 days a week and I'm happy to talk to people. And if you just need someone to talk to, I'm there for you.
Anything else as we kind of wrap up tonight that you want to leave our listeners with that we haven't gotten a chance to talk about yet?
Yeah, well, we've already spoke about the bedroom, the release of the bedroom, but that is going to be in September. The opening is going to be that first Friday, and then there's an artist talk on that Saturday. There will be several different performance pieces and community engagement programming, as well as Gay Church on the 30th. It's at 808 Projects, a new project space on Santa Fe. I'm really looking forward to working with that. So look for that, and I think that's about it.
You've been listening to Outsources on KGNU Boulder, Denver, Fort Collins. I'm Sean Kenny, and I've been speaking with artist and designer Kenzie Sitterud, who is a current artist in residence at Redline, a contemporary art space in Denver. Kenzie, thanks so much for joining us on Outsources tonight.
Thank you.
For more information about Kenzie's work and to listen to the recording of this and other Outsources shows, go online to our website at news.kgnu.org and click on Outsources under the Shows and Features tab. As always, let us know if you have comments or feedback about tonight's show by emailing outsources@kgnu.org. Come with you. You're listening to Outsources on KGNU, and we'd like to wrap up this week's episode with a look at events happening in the LGBTQ community in the Denver metro area and beyond. It's June, and that means across the country, many LGBTQ communities are celebrating with pride events and parades. In Colorado this upcoming week, Denver Pride Fest, the largest pride celebration in the Rocky Mountain region, will be this Saturday and Sunday, June 16th and 17th, in Civic Center Park. Events in Denver will feature a Pride 5K race, fashion shows, performers, and a parade down Colfax to Civic Center Park. For more information, go to denverpride.org. Central Denver isn't the only place where you can celebrate Pride this weekend. Aurora Pride will be holding its first Pride parade on Sunday, June 17th at noon. The parade will start at the intersection of South River Street and West Benton Street. Go to aurorapride.org for more information. Finally, Longmont Pride Week will start next Monday, June 18th, and last through Saturday, the 23rd. The week of events will feature panels, mixers, and community events. For a full list of events and dates, go to outboulder.org. And if you have news or events related to the LGBTQ community that you'd like us to share on Outsources, or if you have questions or comments about tonight's program, please email outsources@kgnu.org. Join us next week, Monday at 6:30 p.m. for another episode of Outsources, bringing you homegrown queer radio in the state of Colorado. That's Monday, 6:30 p.m. right here on KGNU, or listen anytime after the broadcast at kgnu.org/outsources. I'm Sean Kenny, and you've been listening to Outsources, KGNU, Boulder, Denver, Fort Collins.